Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Dan, you take vacation with your beautiful wife, Maisie.
Yeah.
And, whoa, the whole city erupts into madness.
Yeah, cops are being assaulted, and there's donuts and fires and flamethrowers. What the heck is going on here, Dawn?
Did they rent out Mike Opelka's flamethrower? Was that it?
I don't know. Or is it homemade? They use a bottle, a can of Axe, and a lighter, you know?
It's nuttiness. So I know the Philadelphia police, on a serious note, we have at least one officer treated in the hospital who's recovering in the hospital, but as many as five police officers who were injured. And it's really the case when you think about what happened over the weekend with this lawlessness, even to go around City Hall like that. So it was across the city, as many as 11 incidents, according to Philadelphia police. And I know you'll get to the audio of one of the deputy commissioners. But the bottom line here is the damage and the quality of life issue that in and around, you know, on a Sunday, you know, on a weekend headed into, we're back to school, all of this lawlessness, the quality of life for people who have to live and work in the city of Philadelphia, but even outside City Hall. I mean, the images of these people doing circles around this, like, ring of fire, smashing in police cars. These cruisers, these police cars are taken out of service because they have to be repaired. So I don't have a monetary estimate on this. Maybe the police will update us. Has Mayor Sherelle Parker, has she been speaking out? I haven't seen a news conference yet, Dan.
I have not seen Sherelle directly, but I do have a message that was delivered via Francis Healy, a deputy commissioner, who had a message from Sherelle to these individuals who are out there on the streets doing this, if you want to hear that, Dawn.
Yes.
I was asked to come here specifically by Mayor Parker and on behalf of Commissioner Bethel to send a message. The message is this. This behavior will not be tolerated. We firmly believe that the actions last night were in retaliation of the police department's aggressive actions that we've been taking since the Mayor Parker's administration began. So we've been attacking this problem rather heavily every weekend with a large number of officers, and we believe last night was some type of retaliation of sorts. But the message is this, and the message is to the people that are involved in the actions, as well as our communities, that this will not be tolerated. The information that we received last night, for those that were involved in it, should be very well aware. We have your picture. We're coming for you. If you think you got away last night, you didn't. Okay, so when you hear that banging on the door, it will be us. We're coming with search warrants and we're coming with arrest warrants. So don't think we're going to lay down and allow this to happen in our city. We're not. And that's a message to the police officers out there as well that are on the line dealing with this nonsense. They also need to know that we're not putting up with this. So that's the message. I just want to make sure it's very clear from the mayor that this is unacceptable in the city and we will not tolerate it.
So the issue is the police, we've known this, have been cracking down on the illegal street racing, reckless driving. And we've had some dangerous incidents. Remember, there was the one on I-95 that the family is suing. There was a young man who, you know, in his very expensive sports vehicle, but he was from Delaware County. So some of these, I know, were suburban people. I don't have a sense of whether or not some of these individuals are from other collar counties. Are they all Philadelphia residents? But in all, we know that one officer was hospitalized, five police vehicles sustained a lot of damage. I mean, you saw fires created. This was nuts. This was insanity. And we know that dozens of officers have been assigned in special task force units to address these illegal, these pop-ups, whatever you want to call it, illegal gatherings.
I have some info on that if you want to hear that.
Yes.
We are playing whack-a-mole a lot of times with these. And like I said, when we get there, they leave because they don't care. They don't care about your safety, their own safety. If you've all seen the videos with their behavior, they really don't care. You know, it's just about how much chaos can we cause, and that's what they do. And they have a lot of them have a large social media presence, right? And they're making money off of that. So that's a whole nother issue. So I mean, it is a problem. We have been fairly successful. The city ordinance has been great for us. It's been a great tool. A few weeks ago, we had a few car meets where, once again, up in the Northeast, where the officers did a really good job, stopped a lot of them. We're able to issue code violation notices under the city ordinance, and lo and behold, a lot of them from Jersey, and the lieutenant charged that night did a good job of calling a lot of their moms because they were underage in their parents' cars. So hopefully that dissuades some of them coming back as well. So,
yeah, so the bottom line on this, because somebody in Kale & Company earlier this morning had suggested that there was an ethnicity issue, like a racial issue. I don't really get a sense of that because these were all over the city. Like I say, they reported at least 11 incidents, hundreds involved. I do see the people speaking out are African-American individuals, white individuals. Like, race I don't think is the issue. I think it's age. I think the one issue they've brought up is that there are no grandmas in the group or grandpas. Am I wrong here, Dan? I mean, do you see any grandparents in the group? I think these are young people.
No, and I actually have audio of a Fox 29 report. It's a guy that, I don't know if I endorse this, but he does the, you know, biking the correct way, if there is a correct way to do it, and is essentially saying, he's calling out that, you know, there are crews that go around that, you know, support loved ones in the bike community that they've lost, and they do those long parades and such, but this kind of stuff just gives them all a bad name. This is what he had to say.
Mr. Willie Singletary condemning the behavior overnight.
Real bikers who love this sport, this is our passion, we're totally against that. If you want to do burnouts, go to Maple Grove. Go to Cecil County. They got racetracks. If you want to do all that kind of stuff, go to the track. Don't do it on our city. This is where we live. This is where we stay.
Yeah, so you think about this, it's nuts. And, you know, 15th and Market, 100 cars. Island and Bartram Ave, 200 cars. That was a drag racing situation. And so in that one, police vehicles were damaged. The crowd finally did disperse on the 3300 block of Fox Street. That's the one where a 39th district officer suffered injuries while responding to assist another officer, and somebody just rammed into his vehicle, struck him, and then that's a hit and run. See, to me, that, you know, that kind of a thing where you've rammed into a police car, that's a felony.
Yeah.
Automatic, boom.
Like what's the point other than to injure a police officer?
Exactly.
You know, you're going with the goal of doing some kind of injury there. It should be at least assault, you know, on an officer, right? And that's a felony, is it not?
I think so.
Like, come on. Like, it's ridiculous. So my question, Dawn, with all of this is, Sherelle Parker, since she's gotten into office, she's kind of had a honeymoon phase, and she's definitely cracked down on them, and you hear this whole idea of retaliation. Where do you think crime stands here in Philadelphia? You're a longtime Philadelphian yourself, and you know all the situation that's unfolded under Kenny, and now we have Sherelle Parker, who is doing harder policing. You think it's working? Could she be doing better? What's your report card so far, Dawn?
I would say, first and foremost, this is only certain neighborhoods and certain select areas. So it's no secret. You know, my husband and I have lived in the Chestnut Hill section of Philadelphia for many decades. And by the way, that's where a lot of, you know, if you think about the northwest part of the city, quite frankly, that's where a lot of city officials and the Comcast people, I mean, that's where a lot of people live.
Yeah.
So I don't feel it. Even during the pandemic, even when, yes, some shops and whatnot were boarded up, there are certain segments of the city that feel this worse. And we have to say that because the truth is there are certain segments of the city where you have a loss of quality of life, and that's not fair. And I think that's what Sherelle Parker had keyed in on as she was running for mayor. She understands that because she's a longtime Philadelphian and she gets it. As a mom and as a resident.
Yep.
And I think that's important to say. So part of me, because I love Philadelphia, I haven't moved out of the city. So part of me feels like I can't stand when people in the suburbs will say, even to my kids, there's some of their suburban friends will say, oh, you live in Chestnut Hill. Like, they're like, yeah, it's the fall harvest day or whatever. And they're like, oh, you're in Philly. I'm not going to go. I'm like, really?
Oh, come on.
Really? To the Badlands of Chestnut Hill? Give me a freaking break.
Oh.
So that bothers me that there's this image that the entire city is under siege. No, that's not the truth. And that's the tragic piece of this, that only certain neighborhoods where a lot of people who've lived for generations and grandmas and grandpas and parents and kids, they deserve what everybody has in the city. These are only pockets of neighbors. It's a tiny percentage. And there's only a tiny percentage of criminals who Krasner, and I think he's gotten better because he has Sherelle.
Yeah, he has no choice.
As the mayor, Sherelle Parker. So I think it's getting better. As far as homicides, if you follow the official numbers, we are way down. By some projections, it's like, thank God. The murder rate, the homicide rate officially, and I know there's that other category, and we've talked to Sergeant Mark Fuzetti about that, but if you look at the official books, the homicide rate is down something like 47-48%. However, other quality of life crimes, carjackings, the break-ins, mm-hmm. those are up, and I will submit to you that because we're still way down in police, more than 1,000 police officers we still have to hire,
yep.
a lot of times... If you have a smash and grab or you're burglarized, you're lucky that if you're going to get a cop to come up and write a report.
It's true. So I would counter, though, and the thing I'm concerned, like, you say people coming into the city, they have this idea that it's dark and dreary and, you know, it's not the same Philadelphia that they knew before. But when I look at Rittenhouse Square, when I look at the Center City District, the tourism district that is indeed supposed to be that safe center, that's where you see these dirt bikers. That's where you see the, mm-hmm. There was the shooting at the pin. You know, it's mm-hmm. there's all this stuff happening around Love Park that I do think tourists should be made aware of. But I think you're right that it needs to be specified that there are certain parts of the city that are still indeed very fun to visit, right?
Yeah. I mean, by and large, when have you heard, really, when have you heard, with all the tourism we have, how many times have you actually heard of somebody who's here, they're visiting?
Once.
Right?
It's
a big city.
I can vividly remember the one time it was a wedding guest that had his watch stolen right at...
Yes.
It was like 4.
Remember that?
Yeah, but that's really the...
That's about it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, compare us, and I'll say this. Think about how many New Yorkers you know. I know so many people who've left New York City. Mm-hmm. They've moved here. Because why? We have housing. Look around. Look at the buildings that are going up. Look in the communities. I mean, when I drive home and I drive down Lincoln Drive, like, it's amazing. There's construction everywhere across the city. And so we actually have housing. And a lot of the housing here, believe it or not, is more affordable than if you live in the Allentown area.
Mm-hmm.
So that is having people move from other areas like New York, where they seem to have the Venezuelan gang issue of those individuals, I'm speaking specifically, let out of prisons,
yep.
reportedly going to places like New York, didn't come here. We don't have that issue.
No. It's crazy, too. And the New Yorkers, the influx of New Yorkers, you have such housing prices, like you're mentioning, in Kensington that align with the, you know, construction tax rebates that you get. It's very accessible for people to live here, especially compared to New York prices. And what's left unsaid a lot of times is that launch of that Acela train over at 30th Street Station.
True.
You hop on there, it's an hour, 10 minutes now.
Nice.
To take a train from Philadelphia to New York City. So that's why so many people are moving down here for that.
Yeah, I mean, when we had Friday night football, not this past Friday, but the week before, and even the kids were told about, oh, Northeast High School, and there was a shooting there last year, and they've had fights, and so just walk away. If anybody comes up to you or what have you, just walk away. We went through the security. Everybody was, you know, prepared, but it's life in the big city, quite frankly. Number one. But number two, it was an awesome experience. And afterwards, I hope I told you the story, but David, my son David, afterwards, he said, wow, they were the nicest kids. And I hope we play them again. They were great. And he said, if they've had fights or they've had problems, it wasn't them. It was the other schools, because these kids were great kids. And I'm like, he felt badly that they got kind of a bad rap, maybe.
Yeah.
But that's just it. We're all people. We want to live. We want to thrive. We want to be able to afford the groceries and the power bill and all of that. And so that's why I still think that when you look at a city like Philadelphia, you look at now the unions not energized for Kamala, Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, I don't think as much as they were for Joe Biden, who they knew. And then you look at the community here of city residents, I don't see the energized voting base that we saw in past elections. That's for the Democrat top of the ticket. 855-839-1210.
You think they just soured? I'm sorry to cut you before going to break, but you think they soured because of Kenny and Krasner, that they're just, or Because of Parker, or where?
Not because of Parker.
No?
I don't. I think people like her. I think she is doing everything she needs to do, although with the Chinatown opposition on the cultural basis, we'll see how that goes. But other than that, I think most city residents are pleased with her performance so far. I don't think it's her. I think it's the economy, and I think it's the fact that people knew Joe Biden here. Mm-hmm. People here came out for him, but will they come out for his vice president? I don't know that they will. I don't feel it. If you feel it or don't, 855-839-1210, the number to call. We have so much to talk about today, and producer Dan, Lieutenant Dan, is back, so we're so thankful. We'll hear all about it. Get your thoughts right back. NBC 10 reporting Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky visiting a Pennsylvania ammo factory yesterday to thank the workers who are producing one of the most critically needed munitions for his country's fight to fend off Russian ground forces. So I didn't know if you had heard that. This is the Scranton area. It's the Scranton Army Ammunition Plant. And he was thanking Joe Biden because, obviously, Joe Biden, this is where he was born. Did you know that Joe Biden was born in Scranton?
Really?
Scranton. He always says that.
What?
But he said, thank you, and we need more. The Scranton plant is one of the few facilities in the nation that makes the 155-millimeter artillery shells that, you know, have increased the production over the past year. So when Joe Biden...
I'm going to have some audio from that if you want.
Oh, do you?
I want to thank all of the workers of the Scranton Army Ammunition Factory, almost 400 people strong, Mr. President, another 1,000 about a half an hour
from
here.
So leader of the factory speaking.
I think it's safe to say that, Mr. President, you've shown the world what courage and resiliency looks like.
Speaking to Zelensky.
Your profound
sacrifice. He's not talking to Biden.
And
yeah, when he's saying
right?
Mr. President,
he's saying Zelensky.
So for the visual's sake, you got the head of the factory here standing right next to President Zelensky, and he keeps pointing to him every time he says President.
He looks like your profound sacrifice and those of the Ukrainian people have been nothing short of remarkable. And from all of us in this part of the world, we thank you for your courage and your resiliency. And I can tell you from General Dynamics, 100,000 people, we're behind you. We know your victory is the world's victory. And so without further remarks, I pass to you, the workers of Scranton, and President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Wow. Thank you so much. This applause is not to me. Really, everything is to you and for your work. Thank you so much. I'm very honored to be here with my team. And started, as I said to colleagues, started my visit to America from your city, from your plant, from Pennsylvania, and just some number. You said that 400 people work here, but I wanted very much to come here and to thank you. 400 people saved millions of Ukrainians because of the result of your work. I'm very thankful, just from ordinary Ukrainians to you. And what can I say? Thank you so much. You helped us to survive against Putin invasion. And thanks to your families, and God bless, everything will be very good with your families and with you. God bless America and Slava Ukraini. Thank you again very much for everything, guys. Thank you.
I'm trying to look at the visual. I know Governor Josh Shapiro was there. Was that Senator Bob Casey?
Yes.
Behind him to his left, so sort of, I don't know if he spoke or not, but Bob Casey getting in the shot. But if you think about didn't say too much. It's like, oh, he appeared.
It's like slightly in the shot. But
he made it. But, you know, Zelensky, this is a visit that he made here to Pennsylvania. It kicks off quite a busy week as he's visiting the states. He'll speak at the UN General Assembly yearly gathering in New York tomorrow and Wednesday, then travel to Washington for more talks this Thursday with President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris as he's trying to still shore up more support for Ukraine. So we do in Pennsylvania here, I know that we have one of the biggest populations of Ukrainians in Pennsylvania, in the Philadelphia area. We have so many friends with family still there. And so, you know, even though I think that Americans are tiring of, you know, this situation, can't believe that it has dragged on, I wonder how this plays out. Because on one hand, the Biden administration has said we have to support them. On the other hand, you know, many blame this administration for allowing it to drag out. Trump has said that after being elected, before he's even sworn into office, Trump has promised he will force them to work out a deal and stop this war. That's what Trump has claimed, right, in his campaign promises.
So I got to ask, I being a slight conspiracy theorist, do you think there's any truth to the claims that Biden wants the war because there's money to be made on it, both individually and for the nation? I mean, obviously the war machine, you know, do they want it to continue to keep making money for our war machine? And two, is there any, you know, all the, you know, conversation about Hunter Biden and Burisma and all this, is there still ties to Ukraine and the Biden family?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of that plays into the fact that this thing has dragged on. Biden has said that it does create jobs for people here in Pennsylvania. But yeah, you mentioned the war machine. And so think about that. Who would have ever predicted back in the day that Darth Vader himself and his daughter, you know, the Cheneys, would come out and endorse one Vice President Kamala Harris and this administration, the Democrats? But they're associated with, think about it, they're associated with that so-called, you know, military-industrial complex. You think about Halliburton, all of that fallout. But it really goes back to the, if you believe in the fact that Trump is trying to break up the swamp and that neither side, Republicans or Democrats in our party, in our two-party system, if you believe that Trump doesn't owe either side anything and that he's somebody who does not support the military-industrial complex, and you think about that, going back to the Eisenhowers, you know, his warning way back in the day, and I played that for you. I don't know when. I should probably revive it again. But it gives me chills, or it's kind of creepy to think about, you know, a president back in the day on the cost of war talking about the industrial war military complex to warn people about it. And now fast forward all this time and think about why so many people said never Nikki. Think about why people have rejected the Cheneys and Dick Cheney. And I've admitted to you, I voted for that ticket back in the day. I voted for Bush Cheney. But now looking back, how does that age? And is it as much of a turnoff as it is a benefit? You know, that's my question here. How does that play out? Because we do have a huge Ukrainian population. But think about it. With Trump saying, hey, this is wrong, because what the media doesn't talk about is how many Ukrainian men have died fighting for that war. Trump has talked about that. And it's a horrible death toll. You never hear about it. You see Zelensky here, and he's thanking everybody. He talks about the sacrifice. What are the numbers? What does that look like? You know, we hear about the casualties all the time reported by the media, the so-called mainstream media. They're all the time, they want to talk about how many Palestinians have died, right? Never mention October 7th as if that somehow is in a vacuum and that doesn't relate to what's happening today. And right now, by the way, you look at the State Department's level 3, they're upping the warnings. I mean, this could be a disaster for this administration if all you know what breaks loose in the Middle East, by the way. So a lot of tension. Trump is saying, I think it plays well for Trump to say, I was the president of peace and prosperity pre-pandemic. When you look at that situation, he shut it down and he negotiated peace. Now, is it a tough negotiation? You betcha. So does he say to Russia and Ukraine, work out a deal? If Russia needs to take back the parts of Ukraine where the Russian, you know, people who still speak Russian and they want to go back to the mother country, would it be a tough negotiation? Perhaps. But to end the bloody war, isn't it worth it? And to save those lives, that's something that Trump has said. 855-839-1210. Be right back. It's September, back to fall, back to the daily grind, which means, of course, you're going from place to place. Is your vehicle ready to go place to place? My friends at Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're going to help make sure you and your family are safe out on the roads. These service centers of the Piazza Premium dealers not only handle all your regular maintenance needs, but they're going to diagnose possible issues before they occur, before they can happen, before you hit the road. So just schedule that service appointment online today, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com, for that dealer nearest you, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, PIAZZA, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com. Tell them Dawn sent you.
The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Taking you back to 1961.
The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals.
So think about how this relates.
May prosper together.
Think about how this relates. Yeah, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, his, and that from the National Archives. Thank you, Dan, for pulling that. But you think about his farewell address, which took a lot of people off guard as he was warning about the military-industrial complex and that so-called, as he just, you heard him say, misplaced power. Take nothing for granted. And how that plays, I mean, it was really prophetic when you think about it. All those years ago, 1961 to now. And he felt passionate about this clearly. And many still say to this day that it caught many off guard. But this is a man in his farewell address speaking, you know, general president, speaking out and warning Americans, not just in 1961. In my humble opinion, this address resonates more with us today than even the American public back then, back in the day. It's important to think about, and I think it plays well. And I'm actually surprised the Trump team does not talk more about this, because when you think about the swamp and why they fear former President Donald J. Trump, why they fear him and why they don't want him. And even, you know, think about how, you know, the Never Trumpers, how many of those Never Trumpers did not want Trump in office the first time, certainly in 2020. And now maybe they're faking it. But deep down, they don't want him, because who does he owe? None of them. When he says, I'm going to clean it up and I'm going to create transparency and I'm going to clean out the swamp, they all shiver and shake, in my opinion. He owes only us, we the people. That's it. And I think that, to me, that is so significant. And more I hear people say, man, you got to look at this guy, how they've railed against him. They've thrown, you think about the persecution prosecution. They've thrown every civil suit, every federal lawsuit, weaponized DOJ. He's been shot at in two different instances. But let us not forget what happened on July 12th. I bring that up because, yes, there have been two known, you know, assassination attempts with, you know, guys with rifles who somehow got close to him. One got a shot off, shot him in the ear. But think about this, that what happened July 12th, and where is all the information about that guy who had the close ties with Iran, with Tehran, and was allowed to fly here and was allegedly, according to the feds, you know, he was arrested on the 12th of July, right before the 13th, which was the attempt here in Butler, PA, By the way, Trump will be back in PA again today in two different sites. But I just think to myself, wow, have we ever seen anything in our history like this? And if, you know, even if you don't, I don't know, Dan, you've said that you're a conspiracy theorist sometimes. I think sometimes. Even what?
I said sometimes.
Sometimes. I never was ever.
Yeah.
Like I would laugh at all that stuff.
Would you?
Even now, my Spidey, I think all of our Spidey senses are going crazy with this because you have to look around and say, I mean, we've never seen anything like this.
There's still so many questions from the first one.
Yeah.
There's so many questions about this one at the golf course. And then we have the, what's shocking to me is there doesn't seem to be a thirst, a demand for these answers. Like what happened? Dawn, you are an expert in this. Investigative journalism, you would think, would be trying to investigate, try to figure out what the hell's going on here. Seems like the media just doesn't care about this. And, you know, I was away when the second one happened with Healy. And I'm like, okay, maybe I'll come back and things might be different. Nope. Still the same crap.
No, and can you imagine if, God forbid, another person like the current vice president who's running for president, imagine, God forbid, that somebody got a shot off or got as close. Take either incident. It would still be in the headlines. The images would be on every magazine, right? They would still be talking about it. The way the media buries that and not just initially. I mean, initially it was shameful, but as far as they just did not want to even say the words assassination attempt against Trump. But even now, they just bury the story. They never want to talk about it. They never want to show the images. And their bias is exposed. But does the everyday person who's working and trying to deal with everything in life, do they notice that? I notice it. You notice it. But how does that impact the everyday viewer? And then you even think about that ABC News debate, which it just does not age well. And when I look at the fact checking that goes into that, as far as it was a horrible debate. I think, to me personally, David Muir and ABC News, they lost a lot of respect. And for their colleague, for their own colleague, Martha Raddatz, who by all accounts, you know, they can never fire Martha, ever. You know why? Because she should file a whatever discrimination lawsuit and say, you know what, I should have been in that debate. If you were going to have a woman who was there or somebody who's an expert, look at Martha. Over the weekend, you had reports from her in the Middle East. I mean, the woman is 80 pounds soaking wet. She's tiny. She is tiny, yeah. But she is feisty. You got to give it to her. I love the fact after that horrific debate performance on the Sunday morning program, she was like, oh, yeah, because I think she was disrespected. I'm calling it out. Martha got disrespected.
She did.
They wanted a younger woman, a hotter woman, whatever you want to say. But somebody who nobody even knows who that is. And there's Martha who has the bona fides and she called it out. She was fact checking it. And in particular, the one in which Vice President Kamala Harris said, oh, nobody's stationed around. And you had all these guys posting, which I hope they didn't get in trouble, but posting videos of those guys and gals currently serving overseas. And they're saying, oh, really? Well, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Well, I guess we'll go home, calling them out. But Martha Raddatz, to her credit, she called them out and fact checked them. So I think we have that going on. I think that the more this debate performance, and I know you can play for us the clip of Harris again trying to trigger the Trump campaign, and she's saying that she'll do another.
Join me on the debate stage. Let's have another debate. There's more to talk about, and the voters of America deserve to hear the conversations that I think we should be having on substance, on issues, on policies. What's your plan? What's my plan? And we should have another one before Election Day.
We should have another one on Election Day. I mean, she is, what nerve when she, by the way, might come out with her new economic policy on fracking and energy this Wednesday.
Oh, yeah?
She's got a lot of nerve.
She has an economic policy on fracking?
I guess. It's a new one. It's the new and improved.
Yeah, sure.
It's the new and improved, my friends.
Jacked directly from the pages of Trump's campaign playbook.
What a joke.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but the people deserve to hear. Well, if they deserve to hear it, who needs a debate? Why don't you go on with it? Why don't you then, Vice President Harris, why don't you go on all the networks? Why do you need Trump? Why don't you go to, why don't you have a sit down with Harris, Faulkner, and all the, go on a tour. Go on with everybody at the network, at Fox, NBC, ABC, nah. CBS.
No, nah, let's go on Oprah.
And the thing with Oprah, even Oprah, I mean, Oprah could not tee it up for her better, right? I mean, she just teed it up time after time. And I think even in Oprah's mind, she was probably like, dang, this woman, I'm just throwing the ball right up there. All she has to do is knock it over the net. Couldn't do it. That even privately, I want to read the thought bubble in Oprah's head as to what she really thought, because it was embarrassing.
What will be your specific steps? Yeah, of course. What will be specific steps to strengthening the border?
So it's a wonderful and important question. You know, my background was as a prosecutor, and I was also the elected attorney general for two terms of a border state. So this is not a theoretical issue for me. This is something I've actually worked on. Okay. I have prosecuted transnational criminal organizations.
Really?
For the trafficking of guns, drugs, and human beings. I take very seriously the importance of having a secure border.
I can't take it. There's three more minutes of this.
We're not going to torture you. But for her to say this, the audacity and inauthenticity of this woman, and that's just it. When she sang this, everybody knows that that clip with Lester Holt, when he said, but you haven't been to the border. And then she says, well, hey, I haven't been to Europe. And she does that weird laugh, that awkward laugh, because she's getting called out.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that clip by heart, and it's a devastating clip.
Talk to you about it, but let me just quickly put a button.
Okay.
Do you have any plans to visit the border?
I'm here in Guatemala today. At some point, you know, we are going to the border. We've been to the border. So this whole thing about the border, we've been to the border.
You haven't been to the border.
I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
Lester, God forbid he asked. It was a quick follow-up. You haven't been to the border. And that's what she fears, those moments. That's why she's not doing the tour, right? We'll talk about all of it. Thanks for being here today. 855-839-1210. Hope will be up in the 11 o'clock hour. I do have a couple of developing stories I want to get to. Be right back.
We are an optimistic people. We are an optimistic people. Americans, by character, are people who have dreams and ambitions and aspirations.
Yeah, that's Kamala Harris. As if she's new to Earth. You know, coming to Earth, Americans have ambitions. I'm expecting her to say something about being unburdened or something. It's one of her bizarre statements that she made. And that's why I think just let her go on a speaking tour. She should just open herself up and go to all. Why does she need Trump if she says, well, we should have another debate? Because, of course, she's being disingenuous. And she knows it's too late for a debate anyway. And didn't Trump initially, when they were agreeing to debates, they were supposed to get on the docket other debates that they were planning for, but it was her campaign that refused to do that. Now all of a sudden to say, oh yeah, we want it October 23rd. I'd love it if you called her on her bluff, but it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money so late in the game. Let's talk about Janet Jackson, which that was a little song by Janet, was it not?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, newer one, 2015, Dreammaker. Not a great song, I gotta say.
So what is going on with Janet Jackson? You know, she is, so it's back and forth. So, yep. So how did this all start? She was interviewed at one point, and she was asked while she's on tour, you know, promotions, she was asked, and she said something to the effect of, that she thought Kamala Harris's dad was a white man?
Yeah, she was questioning the racial background of Kamala Harris and buying into the whole, you know, all the theories about her having a white father when it's been proven that she has a Jamaican father and all. So then she came out with this apology, Dawn, and it's a very odd situation. Because the person who came out with an apology is apparently, according to Janet Jackson, not the actual person who should be speaking out for her, because he was recently fired. And after she said, essentially, that these were not authorized, these comments, the Moa El-Masri says, it's... He no longer works for her. He's fired by Janet and Randy. Attempts to improve her image in front of a public opinion or fans. And this is all something I do not deserve. He offers all of his support, his personal support, to Vice President Harris. So apparently he was trying to do some of his own bidding after already being fired and trying to repair Janet Jackson's image. Janet Jackson comes out and says, hell no, I don't believe what that guy just said. You know, I stand by my initial statement. So there's a whole back and forth, and she's still getting lambasted online. And the sad thing is this all comes after the passing of Tito, and who died within the past couple of weeks, or two. And she's in a very tough emotional state, and she was pressed on this question, had that answer, and it seems it was her truthful response. But now, on top of her brother dying, she's got to deal with all this, you know, negative press. It's a sad situation.
Yeah, it is, but I also think it's significant that the statement that was released by this guy wasn't so bad. That it was like a statement where she said something about she'd like to clarify her recent comments. Yeah.
It's Janet Jackson would like to clarify her recent comments. She recognizes that her statements regarding Vice President Kamala Harris's racial identity were based on misinformation. Janet respects Harris's dual heritage as both black and Indian and apologizes for any confusion caused. She values the diversity Harris represents and understands the importance of celebrating that in today's society. Janet remains committed to promoting unity and understanding.
So she's saying, I didn't say that, and got irked by that. What does that tell you? That she's saying, I didn't say that. That's not my statement. No. So you're sticking with your original thing, because the question was something to the right was about whether she'd be the first female black president or her ethnicity. So basically, she's saying, I never apologized and I said what I said.
And good on Variety for following up, because Variety was, it seems that BuzzFeed was the first to report with the initial apology based on a email or release from this Mel El-Masri guy. Variety went through the channels to contact actual family members and found out that that was indeed a false statement.
So what does that mean? That means that she's sticking with her original statement and that she doesn't want to be clarified, and she said what she said. So you can call her Miss Jackson.
Sorry.
Nasty girl. I mean, she's feisty and she's obviously she's grieving, right, with her brother's death. But I'm just saying, she claimed that Kamala Harris is not really black and she's not backing off of that. And I'm kind of fascinated by that, because the statement by her former person, it wasn't that bad. It was like, hey, she wants to clarify and she believes in unity. And she's like, no, I'm saying what I'm saying. Don't you clarify me. She's just feisty. But she's not backing down. And she's not going to apologize. I don't know.
I pose a question. Is Janet Jackson, like, where's this mentality come from? And is this a shared mentality with a large minority vote here? Where do black Americans stand on Kamala Harris? Is Janet Jackson saying something that's a common thought, or is it she's an outlandish thought? I have no idea, but you know, I wonder.
I think that's a great question. 855-839-1210. I think that I think this is an issue of especially white woke suburban women, especially, and they're like, oh my god, like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't. And Janet Jackson's like, no, I'm not in that crowd. So don't put me in with that crowd. I'm Janet Jackson. I don't have to apologize. And I am African-American and proud. And so don't put your white woke junk on me. I really think that's what I take away from it. Because she's feisty. And she's grieving. It's her big brother. It's sad. So we'll continue. Your thoughts, 855-839-1210. We'll keep hope alive with our one and only Hope Danoff. Be right back.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.